Thank you for that. Welcome back to the show. And you hear a little crisscross applesauce. You know it's time for salesporttalk.com. Not sports, salesporttalk.com. And we're here with Karen Lyle, who co-hosts this with me, 9:40 on Tuesdays Pacific time. Karen, welcome to the show. And as much as we love everything due to, concerning nautical and maritime pursuits, there's also a lot of serious peril that can come on the seas as well. And we saw that in Chesapeake Bay with the Francis Scott Key Bridge in Baltimore last week when a ship hit the support and it came down and it was deadly and tragic. You wanted to talk about that.
Oh, yes. That was certainly one thing that brings to mind the perils of the entrances and exits under bridges and these cargo ships that go through all the time. They're a little bit for our listeners who would not be aware of what happened, and that would be quite amazing since there's been so much news coverage on it. Basically, a cargo ship lost its power as it was nearing the bridge in Baltimore and called out to the Coast Guard. The police were able to clear the bridge so that cars were not on the bridge. They had a few minutes to do so. The cargo ship, also named the Dolly, had also attempted to contact tugboats to see if anyone could come to them soon enough and also to put out anchors, but it was happening too fast. And part of the reason for that was that it was an ebb tide. And the ebb tide is basically, pulling the ship out towards the bridge, so accelerating the pace that the ship had already been under. And what happens when a ship is underway like that is, even if the power goes, the ship still has momentum. And the momentum was accelerated by the ebb tide, and then it was pushed by the current towards the support of the bridge, which it eventually hit, and causing the bridge to collapse within about a minute. And it was about 1 o'clock in the morning that this happened, and so there wasn't other vessel traffic, but the bridge came down on top of the cargo ship, and there it is.
A lot of people don't realize, too, how long it takes to steer a ship once it's underway. Like, to come about takes, I don't know, could take upwards of a half hour to come to a complete stop. Also is something that is quite difficult to do. What was the case there? This was a ship that had lost its power, lost its steering?
Yes, and what happens in a case like this, and now certainly all of those of us who sail or operate any type of vessel, any size of vessel that's smaller than a cargo ship on the waters, through these busy ports, are aware that you always give precedent to the ship because they can't change their course quickly. That any kind of smaller ship or boat can change its course, but if you're in the pathway of a ship, you're going to be run over, hit, submerged, whatever, if you can't get out of the way. And so in the case of the bridge, of course, it's not going to be able to get out of the way. The momentum just couldn't stop. And I was doing some research on what the policies were. Some ports have the direction that they don't have the cargo ships come into the port and out of the port under its own power. They come in with tugboats on either side or in front and back to control the movement of the boat. And if that had been a policy in this port, that would have allowed the tugboats to direct the cargo ship and bring it in and out. And I'll be interested to see if the port decides to have that kind of policy in place going forward. I mean, it's one of our largest ports in the United States, so I'm sure that the amount of traffic kind of precludes a lot of that. But in this particular case, they're going to have to clear the bridge, and then the cargo ship is still going to be stuck there, and they're going to try and get traffic around it. And it'll be interesting to see what you know, whether other cargo ships will be able to come in and go out, or it's just going to be the ships that are basically stuck in the port while they're trying to clear the passageway there.
Is it the kind of thing, too, when you think about, like, we've talked to people at the Maritime Academy here in Vallejo and future merchant marines and how important all that is for our commerce and shipping and economy and everything else. But when it comes to overseas, is there an organization, whereas you have to have a, container ship license, or does every country sort of take care of those things on their own?
Well, every ship usually has to be documented by its own country. So the country that it's whoever the owner is of the ship. So, for example, when the Stat Amsterdam was here this last week, they are not licensed, documented as a U.S. owned vessel. And so they were not allowed to take any passengers for commercial purposes on their ship or do sales when they were in the port, because the United States requires that you have to be a documented vessel in the United States to be able to do any kind of charging for people to be aboard. And so each country does its own documentation, and they renew that every year. But also, cargo ships undergo inspections. And so there were inspection reports for this particular cargo ship, and they undergo inspections for their engines, for other systems, because of these potentials of things that can go wrong. And so those inspections can be done by the country that the boat comes into, and usually they'll have several inspections as they go their places around the world. And there's also a black box, what we call a black box, which is a recording device that records the communications from the vessel, similar to they have as to what they have for airplanes. And so the United States has taken that black box and is doing, and there is an agency that is in charge of determining, you know, what the actions were of the ship and how this all came about. And we don't know the results of that yet. We just know what we have from the recordings that were given by the local police and by the Coast Guard, you know, that have been revealed to the press and shared with us.
Well, we know with flights, it's the FAA. Is that the NTSB or is that the Coast Guard? Or who takes care of that?
You know, that's something I believe it's not the Coast Guard is responsible for the traffic and the things that are happening at the moment. And so that would be who the ship contacted, and the Coast Guard immediately contacted the police, which is why the bridge was cleared. I'm actually not, I don't remember offhand what the agency is that takes the black box for the United States, but that will certainly be a good question for research. I know that we had 6 victims of the bridge collapse, and they were all immigrants from Mexico and Central America. Two divers recovered 2 of the bodies of the men the following day. They were Alejandro Hernandez Fuentes, 35, of Baltimore, originally from Mexico, and Dorilian Castillo, 26, of Dundalk, originally from Guatemala. And the other bodies, they basically had to abandon the search because it was danger for the divers because there was so much tangle of the bridge and everything underwater, and they didn't want the divers to become damaged, and they also needed to start proceeding clearing the debris. So the rest of the bodies haven't been recovered, but those who have lost are Menor Suazo from Honduras, Jose Lopez from Guatemala, Miguel Luna from El Salvador, and another whose name has not been released. And I might mention that my grandmother came to San Francisco in 1929 on a cargo ship from El Salvador. This is my father's mother.
Hello? I think we lost Karen there. It's a tragic, horrific topic to talk about, obviously. But, you know, one of the things I usually do when I interview people during this segment every week is I will say, what are some of the more perilous situations you have, you know, been in as well? Karen, are you still there?
I'm still here. I could hear you, but I guess for some reason you couldn't hear me for a moment.
Oh, anyway.
I don't.
Yeah, go ahead.
I was saying that my grandmother came to San Francisco in 1929 on a cargo ship, and she was coming from El Salvador. And so this is kind of close to home for me, these people who were lost from El Salvador and the other countries in Central and South America, because even though I have English ancestry that goes back to the 1620s and founders of the New England colonies, I do have, you know, most recently my grandmother coming to San Francisco because her brother was the Attorney General of El Salvador, and he was assassinated. And so she and all of her siblings basically came to San Francisco for safety of their lives, and actually all of their lands and everything were confiscated by a government overthrow. So these things that happen, you know, we have, I wouldn't be here today if it weren't for my immigrant grandmother on a cargo ship. She sewed the jewels she owned in her clothes and just came and established a new life here in San Francisco.
That's a question for you. I know that on the seas and even in the air, English is the language, and they'll say, you know, turn right to starboard and port, you know, turn right, you pass on the right, like you do with cars. What are some of the other things when you think about with those laws that maybe can get confused or twisted when we deal with two people speaking two different languages sometimes?
Oh, well, you know, actually going back to I'll answer the question about two different languages. My grandmother never actually spoke English. She always spoke Spanish. She didn't want to learn English. And so when I conversed with her, and my father did, that was in Spanish.
I mean on the water with ships.
Oh, on the water, basically the rules are determined by the country. So here in America, we have red right returning. If you have a red marker in the waterway, that means that you're going to have that on the right. But in Europe, it's on the left. So it depends upon the countries whose waters and the rules are that you're in. And so it's very important to know what those rules are. And basically, that's one of the things that captains and, the right of ways are very important. And when someone is a commercial captain, they go through a series of training, and they have a big, huge textbook that has all the different rules and regulations that they have to know and memorize and have at hand for their operations of any kind of commercial vessel. And a commercial license is usually done by the country that the person is operating their license under. So if they were a commercial captain in the United States, they would be learning those rules. But also, if they're traveling, they're going to have to learn the rules of the countries abroad. So as part of the captain's responsibility is to know what those rights of way are in all the different circumstances. But most especially with the big cargo ship, they have a right of way just because they cannot turn quickly. So therefore, the bigger vessel wins.
You can find out more at sailsportstalk.com. We've been speaking with Karen Lyle. Karen, thanks for your time once again.
Oh, you're welcome. And also on sailsporttalk.com, there is a nonprofit who's providing aid to families of those whose incomes have been lost by the tragedy in Baltimore. So look at the sailsporttalk.com website for more information about that later this afternoon.